facial hair.
Oh man, hot damn, it's everywhere. Where'd you get that beard?
I grew it.
How'd you keep it so clean?
I shampoo it.
Yeah!
We are winding down Movember. When you fuse the words mustache and November, you come out with an annual campaign that encourages men to grow out their mustaches to spread awareness regarding issues affecting men's health. The mustaches are the symbolic equivalent, if you will, the pink ribbons associated with breast cancer awareness. We've seen more facial hair around WPR this month. Perhaps the same is true where you are. And so we thought we'd consult an expert who studies facial hair. Dr. Alan Peterkin is professor of psychiatry and family medicine at the University of Toronto. He's a pogonologist, or someone who studies beards. He's written 16 books, including 1,000 Beards, A Cultural History of Facial Hair, 1,000 Mustaches, A Cultural History of the Mo, and he's co-author of The Bearded Gentleman, The Style Guide to Shaving Face. Dr. Peterkin, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, of course, our instinct is to find pictures of you online. Not to be intrusive or blunt, you look pretty clean shaven, which doesn't fit the profile of somebody who studies facial hair.
I have to say that I've pretty much, like a lot of men, had, you know, all the styles over the years. I had, you know, a goatee when I was in college. I had a mustache for a while, which didn't look very good. In the winter, I get a bit indolent and have stubble, you know, so sort of back and forth.
How did you become so interested in facial hair? Because you're a physician, and it seems a bit of a tangent from your work.
It really is. I think back in 2000, I was interested in writing a cultural history, and I was sort of casting about for a subject, and everything had been done, including the pencil, you know, the paperclip practically. So I was literally walking to work one day in downtown Toronto and saw that probably every third face had some kind of facial hair. And I just sort of started asking, why is that?
And why is that? What's going on here with facial hair?
Well, I think, you know, what I've come to observe over these years, so this, we're sort of 25 years into this wave of facial hair. Things are always cyclical. It comes, it goes. I think men were trying to sort of be playful and rebellious and to express masculinity in a fun way that wasn't particularly threatening.
What does a beard or a mustache or any facial hair, for that matter? It sounds like your dog is very interested in this conversation.
Sorry, you don't have Cesar Milan as Fidel, do you? We have a new puppy.
A new puppy, there you go. But what does a beard or a mustache say about a guy?
Well, I think we used to be able to know that because men used to take their cues from, you know, authority figures, from politicians, from clergy. Nowadays, you pretty much have to ask a man what he's doing because he may not know, or he may just be emulating somebody in popular culture.
Oh, so it might just be a whim. It's not something that is very specific, doing it for a purpose.
I think that's probably true for most men, particularly young men. I mean, you still have men who have had a beard forever or a mustache forever, and it's sort of like a, you know, a fifth limb. It's something that belongs to them and is sort of their trademark. But I think most men just go back and forth in a kind of fun, playful manner.
You cited a statistic that just really captured our attention. Men touch their mustache an average of 760 times a day.
That is kind of ridiculous, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, break that down for us. Explain where this comes from.
I can't remember where I found that statistic, but I think, you know, people generally unconsciously touch their face a lot, and I think men who grow mustaches are particularly proud of them, so it's as if they're sort of checking in on them during the day.
Oh, and maybe perhaps if they touch their face and go, you know, and they're touching their jawline, which would count, I suppose.
That's right. And of course, if you're a villain, you're actually twirling your mustache, right?
Well, and that's another type of mustache here. So there are, of course, plenty of styles out there. What about this style, you know, which has the feathered ends, or, you know, I don't know, even know the lingo. What is that when it sticks out?
Well, I guess it depends. You know, there have been so many styles over the years, and they all have names. So one that sort of, there's the face spanner, which goes right across the face. I think one of my favorites is, you know, the Salvador Dali mustache, because it's sort of like a tightrope just growing off his face. And, yeah, I mean, all of these variants have been around for quite a long time. I think what we're seeing, which is different now, is that men are doing sort of these combo expressions where they might have stubble, and then on top of that they might have a thick mustache or thick sideburns, so that they're sort of, you know, I think that the permutations and combinations are endless when you start doing that.
If you're just joining us, we're with Dr. Alan Peterkin. He's a professor of psychiatry and family medicine at the University of Toronto. He's also a pulmonologist who studies beards. And here we are during No Shave November, Movember, some people call it. And we're looking, taking a deeper dive today into facial hair, men's facial hair. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Have you grown a beard this month? Would you call yourself a facial hair fan? What style do you particularly like or dislike? Are you participating in No Shave November? Share an anecdote about facial hair, 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. So, Dr. Peterkin, you were on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon over the summer when Fallon picked out a mustache. He grew out his beard starting on Memorial Day, had you and a master barber, Russell Cordero, on as guests, then shaved during a commercial break, leaving just the stash. Is that the best way to grow a mustache, to let the whole face grow out and then shave it back?
I don't think that's what most men do. I think, you know, men shave their faces they normally would and then just leave the lip sort of furry. I think he was doing it just for the suspense factor. You know, he grew the whole thing and then everybody was wondering what will come next. What will he do? What will he carve out?
So tell us about being on the show and what it was like to have facial hair front and center on The Tonight Show.
Well, you know, these things are really fun. I mean, my book came out in 2001, and it just shows you that facial hair still remains topical. Even now, when a famous man grows facial hair or shaves facial hair, it becomes a story. So they called me up, and they said, you know, would you come down? And I said, happily. I think he's a very funny man. And, you know, just really a wonderful dialogue and a great host, really.
So Fallon asked about various mustache styles, and Cordero said that the handlebar mustache has become very popular and that he's gotten a lot of questions about it. Any sense as to why that's become such a hit, the handlebar mustache?
I think it's very retro, you know. You sort of think of barbershop quartets and so on. I think that's, again, what young men are doing, is they're sort of looking at these images and having fun. I think what Jimmy ultimately decided on was sort of the Magnum PI mustache, which is really a safe bet for most men, and actually looked really great on his face. I'm sorry he didn't keep it.
Yeah, and what about keeping the upkeep factor here on facial hair? And to keep that type of mustache, what does it take?
Well, if you're talking handlebar, it's a little bit more grooming, but just the Magnum, it's just sort of making sure that you clean the lower lip and that you shave properly. You occasionally might clip the odd hair. I think a common sort of error is that men think, you know, growing facial hair means I just don't have to groom. And actually, for some of these styles, it really is more grooming than having to shave every day.
And what kind of high-maintenance styles would that be? You know, what would be the high-maintenance ones?
Well, I think, you know, stubble, you have to kind of keep it to the right millimeter. You know, you're doing that every day. I think, you know, the one that I really like nowadays that young men are sporting is sort of the mountain beard, which is kind of this bushy Yukon expression. But even that, you know, you have to wash it, you have to trim the odd hair. It sort of looks as if they just got out of bed, but many of these guys spend a lot of time cultivating it.
And is there something true to the 5 o'clock shadow? Is that when you start seeing stubble?
It really depends. That's the other thing I discovered, is that it really depends on your genetics. So, you know, men of sort of Mediterranean background have very dark facial hair, and that seems to kind of express itself around 5 o'clock. I'm, you know, sort of Irish and Scottish, and I can go a couple of days without shaving and not much shows at all.
We are winding down No Shave November, the month-long tradition originally created as a way to raise awareness about men's health that, since it's taken on a cultural significance all of its own, even scientists have explored the measurable attractiveness of beards. Last year, researchers from the University of Queensland in Australia decided to explore male facial hair to determine what role, if any, beards play in sexual attractiveness, masculinity, and short and long-term relationships. We're continuing our conversation with Dr. Alan Peterkin, who studies beards from his base there in Toronto. He's the author of a number of books, including 1,000 Beards, A Cultural History of Facial Hair. You can join in 800-642-1234. Are you participating in No Shave November or Movember? Share an anecdote about facial hair. You can do it 800-642-1234. We'll be back after a news update.
I got a beard, and you help me groom it.
Some corporations rolled out ad campaigns around Movember to piggyback off the campaign to raise awareness for men's health this month. Burger King's mascot, the King, already has a mustache and a full beard, for that matter. So Burger King rolled out a campaign around shaving off the King's mustache. Let's listen to a bit of the commercial set in a barbershop.
This Movember, we're helping change the face of men's health by changing ours. The King challenges you to raise awareness of men's health by growing an epic Movember mustache. Share yours with the hashtag KingStashChallenge, then donate to the Movember Foundation today. The best a king can get.
Burger King's president said, "We are proud to show our support for this cause and hope our guests enjoy watching the King's mustache transformation throughout the month of November." We're discussing facial hair transformations with Dr. Alan Peterkin. He is a professor of psychiatry and family medicine at the University of Toronto. He's also a pogonologist, or someone who studies beards, is the author of more than a dozen books, including 1,000 Mustaches, A Cultural History of the Mo. Your thoughts on facial hair? There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. Do you have a mustache or a beard? Would you call yourself a fan of facial hair? 800-642-1234. You can also post about that facial hair over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Dr. Peterkin, take us back in time and tell us about the origin of the mustache.
Well, it's had a very sort of troubled history, if you like. It's often been seen as the mark of the beast or of the devil, so that, you know, not the most popular expression. In sort of the West, we talk about the three Fs, you know, the fop, the foreigner, and the fiend. So the idea that it wasn't a very positive thing to wear one. And then, of course, in the 70s, the mustache sort of became sexualized. There was the sort of porn star stash and the, you know, the et cetera, et cetera. So for that reason, I think men have been reluctant to wear it. But the Movember movement has really brought it back, in a very playful fashion.
Yeah, what impact has the Movember movement had on recognizing men's health and also putting more of a high profile on facial hair?
I think they've done really terrific work. As you know, the movement started in Australia. What's happening here in Canada is that Movember, you know, sort of started with sort of issues related to physical health, like testicular cancer, which many men find difficult to talk about, you know. But now we've sort of moved into mental health as well. And men are very reluctant to talk about depression or anxiety or alcohol use and so on. So this campaign really sort of gets that into the open so that men can talk about it and get some help, actually.
And let's take a call on this now. Let's go to Rick now in Toma. Hi, Rick.
Hi, good morning. I'm actually in Oma. It's by Hurley. But anyway, besides that,
yes, go ahead.
No reason to be sorry. Speaking of facial hair, which I have a whole bunch of, I've got, and it's above surface too. I've got the beard. I told your call screener, I look at it as a chin quilt, and my mustache is a soup strainer, and so it's a multitasking bunch of hair.
How long have you had facial hair, Rick?
Well, I was probably born with hair follicles. However, it started to sprout after I got out of the service I grew the beard, and it's been with me ever since. I've shaved it off a couple, three, four times to try to impress women. It didn't work, so it's been with me for a long time. It's like an old friend.
Well, Rick, when you do shave it off, do you feel perhaps naked a little bit, or something's missing on your body?
Oh, yes. The times that I have shaved, I look at myself in the mirror and I say, why in good God's name did I do that? And I grow it back as fast as I can. My present wife said to me one time, why don't you shave your beard off? I did. And she looks at me one day, looks at me 2 days, third day, she says, please grow it back.
Well, Rick, thank you so much. Let's get Dr. Peterkin to jump in here.
So you raise a couple of things, Rick. You know, certainly the military has been anti-beard, you know, after both world wars and subsequent wars. Obviously, American and Canadian troops were clean-shaven, so that was the ethos. So, you know, post-service, growing a beard is a sign of freedom. I think you're what we call a lifer, you know, you've been wearing it long enough. I have a really funny story about what can happen if a man shaves without consulting his wife. So you may have heard of Eleanor of Aquitaine. So she was sort of in the mid-1150s. She was married to a guy called Louis VII, a French king, and he had burnt a bunch of pilgrims alive in a church. That's not the funny part, but his confessor told him, as penance, you're going to have to shave your beard off. So he did so in an act of contrition, and Eleanor of Aquitaine was so aghast at his shaven face that she promptly had the marriage annulled, took up with an English king, Henry II, and that led to 300 years of war between France and England. So let the shaver beware.
I love this story. Well, Rick, thank you so much for sharing, and, you know, more power to you to keep that as part of who you are, your personality. Let's go to John in Hartford now. Hi, John. Oh, are you there, John? We can't get John at this moment. Dr. Peterkin, can anybody look good in a mustache if it's the right style, or are there some people who should just be clean-shaven?
That's the interesting thing about facial hair. You know, women can alter their appearance with haircuts and makeup. Facial hair can actually bring out the strengths on a man's face and play down some of the weaknesses. So, for example, if a man has a very thin lip, he can grow a kind of bushier mustache to cover that. You know, bald men often grow beards to balance things out. So, you know, there are sort of lots of styling guides about how to pick the best facial hair expression for your particular face.
Let's go to John now. I think we have him in Hartford. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Well, good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead, John.
Oh, what would you like me to say?
Well, I understand that this is an important month for you and that you are really trying to make sure men's health is highlighted.
I am. Thank you. So, yes, I have an identical twin brother, and we are both prostate cancer survivors. We both were diagnosed at the same time 4 years ago, and we've been big supporters of the Movember organization. And like your story today, talking about men's health, we do grow a mustache every November. I'm sporting one right now, and we do fundraising activities and, you know, try to create awareness and share our story.
How do you think that growing the mustache and just the whole concept of doing this in November, the Movember Foundation and the movement, how do you think that impacts people's understanding of men's health?
Oh, I think it impacts it greatly, you know, just by virtue of wearing the mustache, especially if you're someone like myself who doesn't wear one normally throughout the year. It triggers commentary and questions and inquiries and, you know, what's with the mustache. And it gives you an opportunity then, of course, to explain why you're wearing it, and what your story is. And it creates an opportunity to share the story about doing outreach and fundraising. And, of course, all centered around creating awareness of men's health issues.
Dr. Peterkin, does facial hair spark some conversation?
I think probably, you know, things like beards less so now because, as I said, we're sort of 20 years into this wave of facial hair. But mustaches, definitely. I think mustaches are still not that common, particularly on younger men's faces. So, it's always a subject of a conversation. You know, if a guy's in a bar, he's going to get asked about his stash. It's still a novelty. And particularly, as the caller says, if you haven't worn one and you suddenly do, in a way, that's sort of a bit of a ritual, a bit of performance that invites questions.
Well, John, thank you so much for sharing your story, and happy Movember to you. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. We're discussing facial hair this hour with Dr. Alan Peterkin, who studies beards. And if you have a question about maintaining yours or growing yours, perhaps it might be stubble that you want to perfect or sideburns. Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Dr. Peterkin, do you have any tips on how guys can choose the mustache that is right for them or the beard that is right for them?
Well, that's sort of the subject of the book, The Bearded Gentleman, The Style Guide to Shaving Face. So again, I think what I would say is talk to your barber, because he gets to know your face pretty well, and he might say that a particular style looks good. You know, so for example, if you have a kind of weak chin, squaring things off with kind of a thicker beard will be helpful. If you have a very thin face, you don't want to have long sideburns, because that sort of draws attention to the longitudinal aspects of your face. So it's a bit of an architectural experiment, but barbers and friends, and then certainly there's so many useful websites out there. What I've really found interesting is that men bond and form communities over particular facial hairstyles. You know, their goatee sites, their mustache sites, stubble sites, mountain man beard sites. And they all share these wonderful tips about optimal growth.
Well, so it sounds like there are a lot of resources out there for growing exactly what you want to grow.
Exactly. I think that's more than ever, actually.
Let's go to Augie now in Gays Mills. Hi, Augie.
Hello. I just wanted to get in this conversation about the beard growth.
Yes, go ahead.
I am from Gays Mills, Wisconsin. I have a very large beard, and I just wanted to say, like, everywhere I go, I get asked about my beard and what it takes to maintain it.
All right, Augie, you have to reveal, what does it take to maintain it?
A lot of washing, a lot of conditioning, and I use beard balm, which seems to help it stay straight and not get all crazy on me.
Dr. Peterkin, beard balm. What about some of the stuff you put on beards to keep them in line?
Well, there's a whole new industry sort of, cultivating a market for facial hair, mustache, new mustache waxes, great beard oils and balms, which really, sort of demonstrates what's going on, that this is a market. I think, some of the shaving companies and razor companies got a bit nervous when this wave of facial hair hit, and now they're sort of saying, if we can't beat them, join them, and they're releasing all kinds of new products. I think basically, the men I know kind of keep it simple. They wash their beard in the shower as they wash the hair with kind of a mild shampoo. They might put a bit of, hair conditioner on the beard and then do a rinse. But again, I think it's about ritual. I think, men like buying these products and accoutrements that really celebrate their facial hair.
Augie, when did you decide to grow a big beard?
It's a funny story. Last year, my fiance, I was kind of being lazy, and she told me, "I love your beard, and if you shave it off, I'm leaving."
Oh my goodness! What an ultimatum!
So I haven't shaved since.
There we are, back to Eleanor of Aquitaine.
Love it. Well, Augie, thank you so much for calling in. Let's go to Joel now in Peterson. Hi, Joel.
Hello. How are you today?
Doing well. How about your beard? How's it going?
Well, it's been going since 1970.
That's a long time.
Yeah, nobody recognizes me when I shave it. I don't recognize myself when I shave it off. It's kind of spooky. I've done it once. I won't do it again. My wife refuses to let me shave my beard. I not only have a beard, but I have a mustache, long hair. People keep accusing me of being Buffalo Bill.
So curious, Joel, what made you decide to shave it off at one time?
Big drama. There are three things in life that are most stressful: moving, divorce, and losing a job. I had all those happen at the same time. So I shaved my beard off in hopes that my ex-wife would appreciate the fact that I shaved my beard off for her, and I think all it did is it scared the crap out of her.
If I can just pipe in there, I think that's a really interesting point, that men will grow facial hair or shave facial hair in times of transition. So, you know, as you say, losing a job, ending or beginning a relationship. If you remember, Al Gore, after he lost the election, grew a big bushy beard. And I think he was, you know, sort of saying something with that, changing his public face. In some cultures, growing facial hair is a sign of mourning or grieving. So that, you know, your facial hair can really say a lot about what's happening in your life in a particular moment in time.
Well, Joel, thank you so much for calling in and sharing that story. Dr. Peterkin, do we know a long history about the beard? It seems like it should be something that's been around longer than the mustache.
Oh, for sure. I mean, when you think of it, you know, long before there were devices to shave, you know, cavemen grew beards. There was just no choice. And shaving was kind of a really kind of onerous task, where they'd use clamshells to kind of pluck things out or scrape hair off, you know. And then in the Iron Age, of course, we got implements. The Romans started having barbers, where men would go and have fancy shaves and gossip. So really, you know, shaving became much easier with technology. And then, of course, King Camp Gillette came out with his razor in 1903, and really there's been no turning back. We're up to sort of five blades now, and you can debate whether we need five blades, but there we are.
And then, of course, the era of Dollar Shave Club is with us as well.
Well, that's right, and I think... you know, that there has been this sort of movement that replacement blades aren't particularly ecological. They're very expensive. So I think they were very smart to come up with an alternative that gave men inexpensive blades.
This is the month when we see a whole lot more facial hair among men, thanks to the Movember campaign and No Shave November. They both have gained traction, with men from all walks of life growing out their mustaches, growing out their beards to raise money and awareness for cancer prevention and to raise awareness for men's health initiatives. Dr. Alan Peterkin thinks about facial hair a lot as a pogonologist, that a person who studies facial hair. He's based in Toronto. He's also a professor of psychiatry and family medicine at University of Toronto. He's the author of 1,000 Beards, A Cultural History of Facial Hair, among other books. Join in with your questions on facial hair, your story about growing a beard or a mustache, 800-642-1234. Don't be shy. There's a line for you. Are you doing No Shave November? How is it going? Why did you decide to do it? 800-642-1234. We'll be back after a news update. One study published last year in the Journal of Evolutionary Biology found that women view men with facial hair to be not only more masculine, but more confident, industrious, generous, and sincere than men who do not have facial hair. We're taking a closer examination of facial hair and what it tells us with Dr. Alan Peterkin. He is a psychiatry and family medicine professor at the University of Toronto. He's also a pogonologist, or someone who studies beards. He's the author of 1,000 Beards, A Cultural History of Facial Hair. He's also the author of 1,000 Mustaches, A Cultural History of the Mo, and co-author of The Bearded Gentleman, The Style Guide to Shaving Face. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Would you call yourself a facial hair fan? What style do you particularly like or dislike? Join in, 800-642-1234. Let's go to Joe in Dodgeville. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Kate.
How's it going?
Going good. You're doing a good job. You had big shoes to fill there.
Thank you.
Job you're doing there. I had heard at one point that the band ZZ Top was offered money to shave their beards off, and I was wondering if your guest knew anything about that.
Aha, the music world and facial hair. Dr. Peterkin.
You know, I hadn't heard that, but it wouldn't surprise me because, you know, they're famous for their long, you know, straggly beards. And it really would have caught a lot of attention for a charity event. And certainly things like that well before Movember happened, where, you know, famous men would shave their heads or their faces for charity.
Well, Joe, how long have you had a beard?
It's more or less seasonal because I work outside, so that I like to hunt. So usually shave it off in the summer. It's too hot, you know.
Aha. Uh-huh. So, during the winter.
You're like me. That's what I do as well.
Yeah.
Clean shaven in the summer and something in the winter when it's cold.
Yeah, I did shave my goatee off at one point. My wife and sister-in-law were laughing so dang hard. I don't think I'll ever do that again.
Well, Joe, thank you so much.
Okay.
Doctor, yeah, you too. Dr. Peterkin, can you feel a temperature change, or do beards feel hotter to wear beards?
You know, there's been a debate that you know, they protect the face in the winter you know, men want to be clean shaven in the summer. I there may be some element of temperature regulation, but I think it's really a personal choice. I just wanted to get back for a minute to the study you quoted about
Yeah.
you know, men being found to be more sort of marriageable and desirable and masculine. I think that's really generational. If you ask
Yeah.
your grandmother about facial hair, she's going to say, no way, I don't like it. But I think over the last 25 years, young women have grown up with brothers, boyfriends, fathers who had facial hair. So they're much better disposed to it now than, say, the generation right after World War II. I think what we know is that if you give people photos of men with facial hair, they'll always rate that face as more masculine because, you know, in our culture, we really value a big jaw, a square jaw, and the beard seems to kind of, you know, sort of bring that about in some kind of visual way. But if you ask these women, would you want to kiss the guy, that really varies generation to generation.
Yeah, and what about kissing and beards? I mean, prickly, and how, you know, why is there such an attractive nature for women who, you know, we've been hearing callers who say, wow, they get in trouble if they threaten to shave their beards.
It's funny. I interviewed one woman from England, and she called it snog burn. You know, snog is the British term for kissing. So that if you kiss a guy with a bristly mustache or beard, be prepared for dermabrasion. And I think men are aware of that. That's why they are conditioning their mustaches and so on to keep them soft and a little more tolerable for their mates.
Well, Dr. Peterkin, when we were discussing doing this segment, I chimed in with, oh, you mean flavor savers. Have you heard different terms for mustaches? And can you elaborate?
There's some 200 terms. It's really quite amusing what men have come up with, you know, so pretty much anything you can think of has been expressed in some kind of way.
Have there been studies done about what might also be in facial hair? I mean, can food get trapped in there? Can other things get trapped in there?
Yeah. So that gets sort of into the hygiene debate, you know, that earlier in the century, the idea was that beards were bacterial traps and that food would get caught in them and so on. And I think we've shown that's not true. As long as a man sort of washes his face regularly and checks himself in the mirror, I don't think he's at risk too much of kind of a food mess.
So you recommend cleansing the beard daily or washing it?
I think, as I said, keep it simple. You know, a man's in the shower and he washes the hair on his head, and he can wash the beard as well, and that's the easiest thing.
Well, after a few days, beards can get especially itchy. Why does that happen, and what can be done to deal with it?
It's a very common phenomenon, and that's why some men give up, is the itchiness of new facial hair. And I think, again, you want to use a soft soap when you're washing and moisturize after. That's what really helps prevent that kind of chafing and itchiness.
And once the beard grows out a little more, does that itchiness go away?
Generally, it does, yeah. So what we say is, you know, sort of let your facial hair grow for 4 to 6 weeks to see what you've got. That way you know where is it full, where is it not full. And you sort of see what you have to work with. It's so interesting because in this wave of facial hair where, you know, really at least over half of young men in urban areas are growing facial hair, some simply can't. And it's sort of a sign of failure that, you know, I can't grow a proper beard. So much so that men are actually getting beard transplants, if you can believe it. So,
what?
Yeah, that they're actually, you can get hair transplanted onto your head, but you can also get it onto your face. And that's important in some cultures where, you know, a beard is sort of the token of doing business. You know, it's sort of your public face, and culturally you're expected to have a beard, and if you can't, you're in trouble.
So is that a branch of dermatology, or is it a branch of some kind of plastic surgery?
I think a lot of, you know, different doctors do hair transplants, but probably, yeah, dermatology and plastic surgery would be the main ones, and I assume it's not cheap either.
Men have also gone to barbershops for very involved shaves. What about that tradition?
I think ritual is so important. And, you know, in our fast-paced culture where everything is just, you know, second-based, the idea of sort of self-care, taking a moment. Most of us, you know, observe our fathers shaving as young boys and can't wait for the day when, you know, we can do it. So it's always been a ritual, right back to the Greeks, that where a man's first shave was sort of honored and the first sprouts were saved and honored. So I think, you know, certainly you can do it slapdash really fast in the morning, but men are starting to say it's okay for me to pamper myself. You know, I can buy these nice products. I can go to the barber and have a straight shave, you know, the whole ritual with the hot towels and the lather and the aftershaves and so on, and really get into it.
Let's take a Willie here who joins us in Steuben. Hi, Willie.
Hey, how's it going this morning, you guys?
Going well.
Great program. All right. I was in the Marine Corps from 1984 to 1988, and I don't remember the exact year, but during that time, we worked with a lot of Navy personnel, the corpsmen mostly. And during that time, the Navy outlawed, I guess that's what they called it, outlawed beards after a long tradition of having beards in the Navy. And there were a lot of people in the Navy who were very upset that long time tradition was being ruled out for one reason or another. I don't even know what the reason was. But there was a lot of people that were upset in the Navy that they couldn't have their beard anymore after, you know, 200 plus years of being able to have a beard. And the other thing is, I don't know if the professor has heard about snotsicles, But where I'm from, I'm a logger, and you have a beard in the winter to keep your face warm. And I am a testament to, there is a temperature differential with facial hair. And I'll take your comments off the air because I live in Fell Hell between two hills and Steuben. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Willie. Dr. Peterkin.
What a great call. Well, first of all, I guess, back in Victorian times on both sides of the pond, in Britain and in North America, there was a navy beard, very distinguished. I think why we've seen the beard disappear in the military, the Navy, the Air Force, is really a functional thing, that you can't get a proper seal on a safety mask if you had a beard.
Oh.
And for the same reason, in some hospitals, like when there are times, I was working in Toronto when we had the SARS epidemic, and all of my colleagues had very distinguished psychiatric beards, and they had to shave them because we had to wear masks for a certain period of time. So I think it's sort of a logistic thing. I think also, the military has used facial hair as a sort of symbol of almost of control, really, that the rules were in place and that men had to follow them, and that was a sign of a good corps, a good morale, everybody looked the same. So I think that's it. Now, snotsicles, I've never heard that term before, but it's quite vivid. I could certainly picture it, whether I want to or not, and I think that's a great term. So, yes, the idea that if you have facial hair, liquid will freeze on your face if you're outside in cold weather.
Well, any parting words for men with facial hair or guys who are thinking about trying to grow a beard or a mustache?
I think really have fun with it. I think this is the freest time in human history for men to kind of express themselves in their grooming, more so than any other time. As I said before, it was all about authority figures and fitting in and doing what you had to be like your king, your president, your clergyman. And now men are free to have facial hair. Our fathers wouldn't have been hired probably if they'd had beards. It's different for a younger generation. So I'd say, have fun with it. Experiment, consult your mates because I think they get a vote. and then the idea that you can go back and forth. You're not wed to one style. A number of callers said they have one thing in the summer, one thing in the winter. So, play with it and have fun.
Dr. Peterkin, thanks so much for joining us. Dr. Alan Peterkin is a professor of psychiatry and family medicine at the University of Toronto. He also is someone who studies beards, author of a number of books, including 1,000 Beards, A Cultural History of Facial Hair. This hour is produced by Bill Martins and Nyasia Ellison. This is the Ideas Network.